The Progressive Commentary Hour with Gary Knoll, Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network.
To the Progressive Commentary Hour. Today, we are going to explore in depth the subject that is so important, and that is when receiving information in the mainstream media, television, print, radio, more often than not, it is sponsored by one of the respected institutions, such as the American Cancer Society, or the American Dietetic Association, or the American Heart Association, the American Diabetic Association, or any one of at least 20 different groups. Rarely, if ever, is there any original reporting on behalf of the person who is assigned to be the deliverer of this information. So if we're told, for example, that you don't need vitamins, or that that we need fiber, or that to prevent cancer, stop smoking and stop drinking as much, and there's nothing else really to do, we follow that advice. Here's the question then for our Progressive Commentary Hour host. What if the information that these organizations impart, at least share, is based upon their own economic interests first? And about us, a leading international authority on the causes and prevention of cancer. He is Professor Emeritus of Environmental and Occupational Medicine at the University of Illinois School of Public Health and Chairman of the Cancer Prevention Coalition. Now, he has frequently testified before Congress as an expert witness on cancer risks such as pesticides, petrochemicals, cosmetic products, the BGH hormone in milk, sex hormones in meat, irradiated food, etc. He is also a person who has done more probably than anyone else to inform us that there is a second opinion when it comes to the advice given by the National Cancer Institute and the American Cancer Society. He has been a sharp critic of these agencies. He has also received numerous awards, including awards from the National Wildlife Federation, the Environmental Justice Award, and Bioneers Award, and the Right Livelihood Award. That's the alternative Nobel Prize. His most recent book is National Cancer Institute and American Cancer Society, Criminal Indifference to the Cancer Prevention Conflicts of Interest. We'll be beginning with him. Then we're going to Daryl Rogers. Daryl focuses on the Alliance of Natural Health's criticism of the American Dietetic Association. And he has been at the forefront of spearheading amendments to the Senate 510 Food Safety Bill, but ultimately wants it defeated. He has higher degrees in government studies from Catholic University in Washington, D.C., and he's worked in public health policy and has been with senatorial campaigns on Capitol Hill. And we will be talking with him, and then followed up by Dr. Lynn Saputo, medical doctor, board certified in internal medicine, and the founder and medical director of Health Medicine Foundation in California, which is a nonprofit group. He is a graduate of Duke University School of Medicine. He is also the author of A Return to Healing. And he hosts the Prescriptions for Health on Progressive Radio Network. Those are our panelists. I'd like to welcome all of you to our program.
Thank you very much, Gary. Thank you, Gary.
I'm going to begin by sharing some research that we have come up with in our own office and that allows us to get the larger overview. And I will be following this with an in-depth article. I'll try to start as recently as possible, and that is the British Medical Journal, October, just a month ago, revealed the degree to which our health policymakers are beholden to special interests. A group of researchers at the Mount Sinai School of Medicine in New York City discovered that, an incredible 52% of all members serving on panels that produced national medical guidelines had financial conflicts of interest. The authors of the study surveyed 288 individuals who sat on advisory panels for different influential health organizations. They found that 150, or 52% of those evaluated, had financial ties. And the study investigated panel members who work with national health groups that were actually establishing information on, for example, treatments for high cholesterol and diabetes. And the researchers reviewed the backgrounds of panelists who work for several organizations, including the American Heart Association, the American Diabetic Association, in just a 10-year period. The lead author of the paper was Dr. Jennifer Newman. And she says, quote, "The majority of guideline panel members and half of the guideline panel chairs in our study receive some sort of compensation from industry, indicating a risk of industry influence on guideline recommendations. One area in which the presence of a conflict of interest may be particularly concerning is the development of clinical practice guidelines. Guidelines serve to standardize care in medicine and to inform evidence-based practice, and ultimately to protect patients. So their freedom from bias is particularly important," unquote. And of the 73 panel members surveyed who declared no conflict of interest, the researchers found that eight of them did, in fact, have at least conflict of interest. So the results of this study confirm the extensive and damaging influence of corporations on national groups that claim to be unbiased and solely concerned with health of Americans. Then we have the American Heart Association. A glance at the list of major donors to the American Heart Association gives a clear view of the strong alliance between special interests and this powerful organization. According to their group's annual report, corporate sponsors donated $1 million or more, known as Heart and Stroke Champions. And this included pharmaceutical giants Abbott Laboratories, AstraZeneca, King Pharmaceuticals, which was acquired by Pfizer last year, Merck, Novartis, Wyeth Aris Pharmaceuticals, Pfizer, Forest Laboratories, Bristol Myers Squibb, Bristol Myers Foundation, Bristol Myers World Headquarters. Those are three separate donors. Food conglomerate Conagra Foods, the owner of brands such as Chef Boyardee and Ready Whip, also donated more than $1 million. Then you have the artificial sweetener endorsement. Research presented at the American Stroke Association's International Stroke Conference this year identified compelling evidence of a strong association between heart disease and stroke and soft drinks containing artificial sweeteners such as aspartame and saccharin and sucralose. The study, which was jointly carried out by researchers at Columbia University and Miami's Miller School of Medicine, concluded that drinkers of artificially sweetened sodas were 61% more at risk to experience vascular events than those who did not drink diet sodas. Ironically, who sponsored this entire event of the American Heart Association? Well, the saccharin makers. And that should have set up a red flag. Quote, "Try non-nutritive sweeteners such as aspartame, sucralose, and saccharin in moderation. Non-nutritive sweeteners may be a way to satisfy your sweet tooth without adding more calories to your diet. The FDA has determined that non-nutritive sweeteners are safe," unquote. And that was in the American Heart Association. Also mentioned on the website, quote, "Aspartame is another common artificial sweetener. Extensive investigation hasn't shown any serious side effects from aspartame," unquote. Oh, yes, it has, as you will see from an upcoming original investigation. And then just a few more. Nintendo endorsement. In 2010, the American Heart Association gave permission for its logo to be used in a gaming platform, a console that requires people to engage in some degree of physical exercise. It's a flick of a wrist or swinging an arm. And Nintendo donated $1.5 million to the association. That's a huge increase over what they gave, which was just $10,000. And the placement of the organization's stamp of approval on a gaming device has been criticized by many leading health experts. Then Rite Aid scandal. Despite its established history as a large distributor of cigarettes, one of the leading causes of heart disease, the American Heart Association selected Rite Aid Drugstore franchise as a sponsor for its Go Red for Women campaign aimed at educating and awareness on cardiovascular health issues for women. Despite public criticism, and Rite Aid's sponsorship for this venue quietly continues. So on the one hand, the American Heart Association is telling women not to smoke. On the other hand, it's taking money from Rite Aid that sells a lot of cigarettes to women who smoke. And then you have Genentech endorsements. They gave, the American Heart Association gave a dubious endorsement to TPA, a heart medication sponsored by pharmaceutical company Genentech, without mentioning any conflict of interest. Oh, but here's what they said on their website. Pete, quote, American Heart Association, PT holds enormous potential for the treatment of ischemic stroke, which amounts to 80% of all strokes. It is estimated that PT could be used in 400,000 stroke cases per year to save lives, reduce disability, and reverse paralysis, unquote. After this influential declaration, media outlets reported that Genentech was the partner, the American Heart Association, in this campaign and gave them $2.5 million. So where does it end? That's just some on the American Heart Association. Other conflicts of interest will be shown as we evolve our program. Now to my guest, Dr. Samuel Epstein. Dr. Epstein, welcome to the program.
Good to be with you.
Dr. Epstein, would you take us through what you have found about the war on cancer, what we have a really good idea contributes to malignancies and cancers, what we have done at the national level through the American Cancer Society, even though it's a private organization, it's the tail that wags the dog of the National Cancer Institute, and their conflict of interest that you have seen over the year. Are they giving any advice or information that you have found actually will cause cancer? And if so, why would they be doing this? Is there any conflict of interest you have found?
Well, that's a pretty large table of events and issues, which I'll try to summarize as best I can. The most important point to make is that in the last few decades, say from 1970 or so to the 2009, there's been a massive escalation in the incidence of cancer. And the troubling thing about all this is, apart from these facts, are that we know the avoidable causes of these cancers. They're well documented, and there's no argument about it in the scientific literature. Let's go through a few of these. First of all, we're going to now talk about, from 1975 to 2008, about a half a dozen or so cancers. One, first is malignant melanoma. The incidence of that has gone up 185%. 185%. And this is due to the use of sunscreens in childhood that don't block long-wave ultraviolet light. The next is, going numerically down, is thyroid. And the incidence of that is has gone up by about 168. And ionizing radiation is the overwhelming cause of that. And incidentally, very recently, I've been asked by dentists what is the situation as far as radiation is concerned. And there's no question at all that some dentists use radiation and for diagnostic purposes, diagnostic radiation, almost on a routine basis. When patients come in, they have full mouth x-rays, and there are variations on this theme, and particularly when it comes to children. This is as common as ever, because, of course, the rate of growth of teeth in childhood is particularly much, and so there's a great interest in this. And I don't think there's any question at all that the escalation of the incidence of thyroid cancer to 168% is due to dental radiation. That's the overwhelming cause. There are other causes, too, but that is the overwhelming. The next is a cancer called non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, which has gone up by about 80% or so. And this is due to hair dyes, black hair dyes, particularly those that contain an ingredient known as phenylenediamine, which is the standard ingredient in American dark hair dyes. There's also another ingredient in, which is responsible. There's also another product which is responsible, which are herbicides. But the hair dyes are the overwhelming and preventable cause. The next is acute childhood leukemia, particularly a variety called lymphatic or lymphocytic. And we know the avoidable causes of this. It's ionizing radiation, nitrite preservatives in meat. Meat is still preserved with nitrite, which is just the evidence for this is just overwhelming, that the nitrites interact with amines in the meat to form nitrosamines. Then also domestic pesticides, and also parental exposure to occupational carcinogens, to carcinogens in the workplace, which they bring home on their clothes and in their breath. And so for this variety of exposures, we've seen this escalation in over 60% for this particular childhood leukemia. The next is testicular cancer. That shot up by about 60% from 75. And this is due to, without question, exposure to pesticides, hormonal ingredients in cosmetics and personal care products. Conventional cosmetics and personal care products are a cesspool of a variety of carcinogens, a wide range of carcinogens, hormonal toxins, and other toxic agents. And this is the overwhelming market still. We do have some new markets for products, but however, they're not sufficiently common, and they're not sufficiently widely used. And then we come to testicular cancer. The incidence of testicular cancer has gone up by about 60%, and these are due to pesticides and the hormonal ingredients in cosmetics and personal care products and estrogen residues in meat. Some of you may be interested to know that American meat and milk are virtually banned worldwide because American meat comes from cattle which are implanted with sex hormones before they enter into feedlots 100 days prior to slaughter. And this increases the sex hormones implanted in them, increase muscle mass and profitability by about 10%. And this is still permitted, and as I said before, the American meat is banned worldwide. Next is breast. That's shot up by about 20%, and there's a variety of causes of that. Birth control pills, hormonal ingredients in cosmetics and personal care products, diagnostic radiation, and routine premenopausal mammography. We have very strong body of evidence that premenopausal mammography poses major risks of breast cancer, and the literature on this is unarguable, surprising but unarguable. Then ovary, now we won't talk about incidence because we'll talk about mortality, because if once you get ovarian cancer, it's to all intents and purposes a death sentence. So whether you talk about incidence or mortality, it's basically the same, and it's gone up by about 5%, particularly in black women. Because black women quite commonly use talc powder as for genital dusting. The incidence has gone up less, and the mortality has gone up less in white women. But as I say, there's just this predilection of black women for the use of this powder. Now, these are some of the glimpses of what has been happening. I think before moving on, it would be helpful to have some indication about who is responsible for all this.
Please, Dr. Epstein, please speak up and please speak into the telephone.
I beg your pardon. The question basically is, who is responsible for this? Well, we have two institutions, the American Cancer Society, which is a so-called non-for-profit, and the National Cancer Institute, which is part of the National Institutes of Health. Actually, it was separated from the National Institutes of Health in 1972 when President Nixon declared the war on cancer and gave $200,000 directly to the National Cancer Institute. By so doing, he separated it from the National Institutes of Health and from the whole of the overall policies of the National Institutes of Health, these 33 institutes, which are not allowed to take money under the table or over the table, and they're very different. It's an entirely different set of policies. Now, the American Cancer Society's position is, if you get cancer, it's your own fault. You eat too much, you smoke too much, fast smoking is no argument, you spend too much time in the sun, or it's just your own fault. And there's a variety of variations on the fault. But when you look at the real interests of the American Cancer Society, you'll find that there are extraordinary hidden conflicts of interest. Take, first of all, in public relations. From 1998 to 2000, roughly 2000, the PR for the American Cancer Society was handled by Shandwick International, whose major clients included R.J. Reynolds Tobacco Holdings. Let me repeat again. The major thrust of the American Cancer Society is to trivialize or deny avoidable causes of cancer in air, water, food, in the workplace, but to focus on bad behavior. You smoke too much. You drink too much. You spend too much time in the sun. It's your own fault. That's fundamentally their position and the position which they propagate to the public. But coming back to the PR of the American Cancer Society, as I repeat again, Shandwick International, and whose clients include R.J. Reynolds. The next is the PR for the ACS has been handled by Edelman, and Edelman's major clients, again were the tobacco industry, Brown & Williamson Tobacco, and a group called the Altria Group, which is a parent company of Philip Morris and Kraft, and the whole of the fast food and soft drink beverage companies. Now, there's also the industry. There's a predominant industry funding of the ACS, American Cancer Society, quite apart from the public funding. Let's just run through a little bit of this funding. And the ACS has received contributions in excess of $100,000. From a wide range of what are called Excalibur donors. And some of these companies are responsible for environmental pollution, while others manufactured products containing carcinogenic ingredients. And to give you a few of them, the petrochemical companies like DuPont and BP and Pennzoil. Let's see what else. Big Pharma. AstraZeneca, Bristol-Myers, Novartis, automobile companies, Nissan and General Motors, cosmetic companies, Christian Dior, Avon, Revlon. Now, the reason why this is particularly important because the products produced by the major cosmetic companies are laden with a wide range of carcinogens, hormonal ingredients and others, all of which I've documented and published in a recent book called Toxic Beauty or Healthy Beauty. It's been renamed. And this is detailed with detailed scientific references to support what I've just said. Now, nevertheless, as reported recently, actually in December 2 years ago in the New York Times, the American Cancer Society claims that it holds itself to the highest standards of transparency and accountability. So here we have an organization that says, if you get cancer, it's your own fault, you smoke too much, you drink too much, etc. If only you could lead a good, clean life, you'd be okay. But when you look at this, you find that there has been a reason for this, because it's received under-the-table money from these industries, from the wide range of industries, some of which I've mentioned. And the PR has been handled also by the PR of the companies that represent the tobacco industry. It sounds a little like Alice in Wonderland. And sometimes I have the kind of feeling that I am in Alice in Wonderland when I, as I continue working in this area of politics of cancer and avoidable causes of cancer. So let's move on to some other concerns, related concerns. Well, the Look Good, Feel Better program is another example which I'd just like to cite before moving on. And that is, in the American Cancer Society Cancer Facts and Figures 2002, there was a section called the Look Good, Feel Better program. For women who've had a mastectomy, this program would claim to help restore their self-confidence and their self-image by providing them with a free package of cosmetics and personal care products after they've had their surgery, when they're particularly in this very, very sensitive and anxious mood. However, in the Look Good, Feel Better program, the American Cancer Society fails to disclose that there are a wide range of ingredients that cause breast and other cancers. Sounds unbelievable. Literally sounds unbelievable. Now, Dr. as the years Epstein, roll by,
Dr.
the American
Epstein.
Cancer Society has consolidated its relationship with the National Cancer Institute. And while this talk is on the American Cancer Society, I have to bring in the National Cancer Institute because it's an unholy duo. And the National Cancer Institute has historically been disinterested in cancer, the avoidable causes of cancer. However, after President Nixon declared the war on cancer, there was a minimal input of interest in avoidable causes of cancer. However, as the years went by, this input has become non-existent. And the National Cancer Institute now, as a partner of the American Cancer Society, has shared its total disinterest. And Varmus, the present president of the National Cancer Institute, has frankly stated, "We don't work on cancer prevention. That's not our job. We don't know what causes cancer, and we work on the science of the avoidable of all cancers." So, this is very odd. We, the taxpayers, are funding two massive organizations, which we believe, or would like to believe, are helping us to prevent the risk of cancer, on the one hand, and on the other hand, when we get it, to treat it. And as far as treatment is concerned, there is no question. The American treatment for cancer is good, although the costs in this country are about 50 times higher per patient than they are in England and elsewhere in Europe. Now,
Dr. Epstein, we'll give you about two more minutes to conclude your insights. We want to get to our other panelists, but you're giving us a lot of very important information.
Okay. Well, what I would say to listeners is do not, under any circumstances, contribute to the American Cancer Society.
Okay. Well, Dr. Epstein, we appreciate very much that you're sharing this with us. This is Dr. Samuel Epstein. You've been listening to Professor Emeritus of Environmental and Occupational Medicine, University of Illinois School of Public Health. And he has just laid out case after case of how the people in the tobacco industry and in other industries that cause cancer have been the leading contributors to the American Cancer Society. And the American Cancer Society creates policy and direction for the National Cancer Institute. And it's always been that way. We thank you very much, Dr. Epstein.
It's been my pleasure.
Let us now go over and say hello to Daryl Rogers. Daryl, nice to have you with us.
Thanks for having me.
Daryl, you are with the Alliance of Natural Health, and you criticize the American Dietetic Association for giving information out at the same time. That information frequently aligns itself with people from the sugar industry, the fructose industry, and different what I would personally consider junk food industry. Now, I am a registered dietitian. I am a PhD also in clinical nutrition and public health science. But in New York State and around the United States, you have to be a registered dietitian in order to practice, in order to, in fact, even counsel for free in Ohio and some states. So when you took them on this challenge to see who's paying their bills and what influence do they have in creating public health policy in the hospitals and at the state levels, and also who was behind the Senate Bill 510, the food safety bill, tell us what you found. Show us the specific instances where the American Dietetic Association was giving information that did not help the American public, but did help those who've given it money.
There are almost so many examples to note. I will spend my time highlighting some of the most egregious ones.
Okay, speak up and speak directly into your telephone.
I certainly will. The American Dietetic Association's position on artificial flavors, colors, sugars, BPA, high fructose corn syrup, and genetically engineered food, their position is indistinguishable from the junk food industry. If we need any examples as to how the ADA, the American Dietetic Association, is acting more like a junk food company's marketing department than providing the United States and its citizens honest, accurate nutrition information, we don't need to look far. Specifically, the Coca-Cola Corporation's Beverage Institute, which is their nonprofit association, this Beverage Institute actually provides continuing education courses to registered dietitians. Their program materials include things like why sugar is not that bad for you, urban myths about fluoride, artificial flavors and colors and sugars. I took a look at all their materials, and to be completely honest, I was shocked that not a single one of their studies are newer than 1985, as if nutrition and science ended then. It seems as though the American Dietetic Association likes to say that they are science-based. That might be the case, but they are science-based of about a generation ago. The American Dietetic Association has also been under investigation by Congress. All this information can be found at the reallyeatright.org website. That is our campaign page, reallyeatright.org. The American Dietetic Association has been under investigation by Congress. It is in their materials, American Dietetic Association materials, to Senator Grassley, that we got new insight into the collusion between the American Dietetic Association and private companies that are junk food companies, that are pharmaceutical companies. Specifically, the American Dietetic Association receives about $1 million a year from pharmaceutical medical device companies. This is outlined in their materials that they provided Senator Grassley. Searching through the American Dietetic Association's IRS forms that they have to submit to the IRS because they are a nonprofit organization, we found about $3 million a year in other contributions from industry. Because the ADA is a 501c6 organization, it's kind of a trade association, they don't need to reveal this information. But what we do know, and this is on the American Dietetic Association's website, companies like Coca-Cola, the American Dairy Council, Pepsi, ConAgra, Monsanto, Unilever, all the big players in the processed food and chemical food industry are all sponsors of the American Dietetic Association. You also need to look no further than the recent American Dietetic Association's national conference in San Diego that was held in September. There have been numerous write-ups and reports and blogs and articles online from very respected nutrition professionals like Marion Nestle, even very mainstream news websites such as foodsafetynews.org or foodsafetynews.org. They are not in any way, shape, or form fans of organic foods or of natural health, they had a scathing article about the American Dietetic Association's national conference. I believe one of the first lines in that article from their reporter said, "I thought this was a nutrition conference, but it actually turned out to be a processed foods convention." To see the pictures and read about the program materials at the American Dietetic Association conferences are absolutely shocking. What it really comes down to is that the ADA is providing registered dietitians the industry-friendly position. On their big open sessions and forums, their presenters are aligned with junk food industries. They belong to industry front groups, and they provide only industry-friendly positions on everything from artificial flavors, colors, sugars, BPA, high fructose corn syrup, genetically modified food. Matter of fact, you won't find any of the presenters at the recent conference, and this conference is attended by between 7,000 and 8,000 registered dietitians. You won't find a single conference there that's put on, or a single session that's put on by the American Dietetic Association that really highlights the benefits of proper nutrition, of avoiding chemicals, of avoiding artificial flavors and colors, reducing sugar intake, the dangers of genetically modified foods, of BPA. They are very hard to find and not officially sponsored by the American Dietetic Association. The coercion of the American Dietetic Association by the junk food industry is half of the problem of the American Dietetic Association. The other half is their multi-state efforts to limit the public's ability to actually receive nutritional therapy. They have bills in over 40 states that limit the practice of nutritional therapy. Right now, there is a bill in California, in New York, and in New Jersey. There are bills in New York, California, and New Jersey that would limit the ability for certified nutritionists to practice. Case in point, the bill in California that has been offered, and we helped delay this bill, though it will be reintroduced next session in January. This bill would monopolize nutrition therapy by changing regulations at the state level in California that would say that the practice of dietetics is the practice of nutritional therapy. To practice nutritional therapy, you need to pass what the state dietetics board believes you need to pass and what qualifications you need to have. We recently seen the damage that these bills and then regulation can have to nutritional access in North Carolina, where there is one of the very repressive regime there on the practice of nutritional therapy. A nationally renowned PhD, a certified nutritionist, and she has certifications in nutrition from organizations whose qualifications in education, in time practicing, have far exceed the American Dietetics Association. She was recently told by her state dietetics board that she needs to go back to undergrad and finish up a few courses because they don't believe that the courses that she does have, even though she has a PhD in organic chemistry, that they don't believe that her qualifications allow her to practice dietetics in the state of North Carolina. She had to close her office, lay off her staff, and then move to a different state. Her patients now can no longer see her. So we see a big two-pronged issue here. One, the complete collusion between the American Dietetic Association and the junk food industry, and the American Dietetics Association's monopolization of nutrition therapy. If we don't stop the ADA at the state level, then consumers and practitioners will be limited, severely limited, in the amount of information that they can actually receive on nutrition.
Let us go into this a little deep, a little more depth, because I helped lead the charge in New York State and New Jersey to prevent the American Dietetic Association from having the bills passed that only a registered dietitian mm-hmm. could practice and be called a nutritionist slash dietitian.
Correct.
And we had won 9 out of 9 battles in New Jersey, but then the 10th battle we lost, and a legislator just told me over the telephone, state legislator, that I have some of my bills that I need to get passed. I'm going to have to go with these other people on this bill so that they'll go with me on some of mine. What we didn't know then, but suspected, is that there were full-time lobbyists working on behalf of the Dietetic Association in every state. Otherwise, how could you have all the states all at once want to have a particular bill? No different than Gardasil. But in this particular case, how could you have this, that Gardasil was going to be recommended for young boys? There was no science. There was no long-term studies. Even the developer would not support this. And the misinformation was universal, meaning the talking points in California about why Gardasil should be given to young girls and boys was the same in Louisiana and same in Florida. How's that possible?
Well, there's no...
Now, hold on. I'm not finished yet.
Excuse me.
All right?
Mm-hmm.
So then we find out this spring and summer, we found out about ALEC, that major corporations have been for years meeting in secret with the state legislators and federal legislators to vote in secret, with the state legislators carrying that vote back into the state legislators and taking the bills, over 800 separate laws that the manufacturers, the major corporations from banking, from fuel, whatever it is, wanted certain laws either amended, changed, gotten rid of, or new laws put into place which would protect them and stop competition or oversight. That's how all this has happened. That's how this dietetic nonsense has occurred, because you sure can't look at a dietitian and think these are the people who know what they're talking about when it comes to total health. They don't. As a registered dietitian, as someone who graduated number one in my class in dietetics, I was appalled at the ignorance that these people were clueless. These were the people who were going to give you hospital food. And 50,000 Americans died in 1 year after taking hospital food. But they have that ALEC group behind them. So they have the big sponsors behind them. So it's not just Coca-Cola and these people giving them donations so that they are not written negatively about. These are about people who can control the political process, control the laws and rules. So if you have the right and truth on your side, real science on your side, you're excluded. And if you have nothing but faux science, you're included. That's how they've been doing this. So unless that connection is exposed, we'll continue to have these insane Senate Bill 510 food safety bill, which has nothing in the world to do with food safety. It has to do with destroying the organic food movement in this country, and making sure that the big players are the only ones who can produce the type of produce they want to sell, and excluding local small farmers. That's what's been going on. Your thoughts?
The collusions between companies and the many medical associations have been well documented. ProPublica and Senator Grassley have conducted investigations in many of these organizations. Actually, all these organizations had to submit detailed information to the Senate. These are organizations like the American Academy of Dermatology, the American Academy of Family Physicians, and these organizations and pharmaceutical companies, health insurance companies, medical device companies, their relationships go very deep. When we were working on the dietetics bill in California, I was on a radio show out there, and the radio show host actually got the lobbyist for the American Dietetic Association to be on the air, and I asked the radio show host, well, ask the ADA lobbyist, if his bill is so innocuous as he claims, then why did they draft this in secret? Why do they meet with legislators in secret? Why did they not get input from any of the other nutrition certification organizations that exist? The lobbyists could not answer those questions. This is a battle that, once exposed to the public, once exposed to legislators, I know we can beat. We have hundreds, if not thousands, of registered dietitians right now knocking on our door asking to help. We are setting up meetings in California with legislators. We're setting up meetings in New Jersey and New York with legislators, with state dietitian, with state members of the American Dietetic Association who are registered dietitians. You know, we're going to be coming out full guns blazing. In the case of the American Dietetic Association, they've never actually had a sustained opposition, a national one. They've been, you know, beaten back many times by, as you had mentioned, Gary, and being quite successful at the state levels. But we want to make sure that this is a sustained campaign so that citizens can have access to nutritional therapy and they're not coerced or co-opted by American Dietetic Association and their junk food allies.
Okay. Daryl, hold your thoughts, please. Let's bring into our discussion Dr. Lynn Saputo, board-certified physician in internal medicine. Nice to have you with us today, Lynn.
Thank you, Gary. I've really enjoyed listening to these two experts sharing their concerns about what's going on. And I do have a comment I'd like to make, if it's all right with you.
Sure, go ahead.
I think we're looking at something much deeper than a fight here, because what we have are cultural issues that are not a surprise, because the kind of behavior we're seeing with these conflicts of interest and this narcissistic behavior that's financially oriented, that has very little to do with service, it goes across all boundaries of our culture, whether it be business, law, medicine, science, or religion. And until we evolve to a higher level of consciousness, it's going to continue to be a fight, and we definitely need crusaders. Absolutely need crusaders, and it's what, you know, Wall Street, Occupy Wall Street is about in many ways. But the problem with Wall Street and with the approach that we're taking in part, not that I disagree with any part of what's been said here, is that we're trying to fight against a huge institution that's way bigger than we are. And the end result of that will probably be what it has been for a long time. Should we manage to overthrow by revolution, whether it be Occupy Wall Street or something else, will be interesting. But I worry about that too, because revolution follows revolution follows revolution. It revolves. And what we need is revolution followed by evolution. And that's what we're missing. So I'd love to see that aspect of what we're dealing with dealt with. I'm a crusader like Sam and Daryl and you, I mean, above all, Gary, have done so much unbelievable work to put this information out there. But I'm absolutely dedicated to making the changes I want to see myself. I think that the change starts with a single thought and a single person, and most of us don't think that that's really the important thing about what's happening to create change. And it is. It always starts with a single thought and a single person. And if you model what you think is right, inevitably what's going to happen is other people are going to notice that, and that's the way we inspire people rather than legislate our way through it. I don't blame anybody for revolting. I don't blame anybody for exposing. I believe in that too, and I don't blame anybody for legislation. But we've got a corrupt Congress that doesn't represent us anymore, and I agree with you. Vote every damn one of them out of office, because they're all doing terrible things. When you see the Democrats totally aligned and you see the Republicans totally aligned, something awfully bad is happening. We're in big trouble.
You put your finger on it, and I want you to explore that more, please. Morality and ethics is what was going to lead us out of this morass. And was
Absolutely.
It not William Blake who said a truth that's told with bad intent beats all the lies you can invent?
Oh, wow.
So I believe what we must do now is we must speak a truth no matter what our motives, no matter how it is said.
Yeah.
We must boycott, through a higher moral standard, anything that we become complicit in corrupting.
Yes,
so if
indeed.
We vote Democrat or Republican in any campaign, we are complicit. If we
yes.
shop at Walmart, if we go to see a local dietitian, unless
yes.
they're holistic and so defined and will show us in advance
yeah.
they're holistic, then we are complicit. If we go to see a medical doctor, no matter what specialty, without first consulting a holistic medical doctor, we are
right.
complicit.
Exactly.
If we do not, if we listen to Fox News and the people there, or MSNBC and
sure.
Rachel Maddow,
sure.
or, and some of the other people who are sycophants and propagandists, Keith Olbermann, a propagandist lout for Obama,
right.
and no matter what. And yet when Bush was in office, he gave very insightful, elegant, beautiful commentaries. He has refused to hold the same standard of his commentaries at Obama that he did against the Republicans, showing a bias from a particular ideology. So we have to get beyond ideologies and say, I will exclude anything that does not honor a higher ideal, whether it's a holistic dentist, a holistic chiropractor, a holistic massage therapist, locally grown organic food, no more genetic engineering, no more Kmart, Walmart, no more Dwayne Reed.
That's right.
I will go to an apothecary. I will see an herbalist before I go to a pharmacist. When we can do that, then we are living a moral standard that they cannot assail.
That's right.
And was it also not Vitro de Sica who said moral indignation is in most cases 2% moral, 48% indignation, and 50% envy? Your thoughts, Lynn.
Well, see, outrage isn't enough, Gary. That's my point. Outrage is wonderful, but you have to take some kind of action. And the kind of action most of us choose is one that's violent. Don't think that Occupy Wall Street is a peaceful movement. Don't think it for a second. Even though many of those people there are trying to do what they think is peaceful, it's violent when you're doing some of the things that they're doing, for sure. And what we're doing, in my view, is we're falling into the trap of allowing this thing to become even more violent, and then what will follow there is really potentially interesting. Who will take the place when this growing thing expands to the point where it's unmanageable by the police? Are we going to bring in state troopers or the federal army? Are we going to bring in FEMA people? And are FEMA camps going to be something that are become realistic again? I worry a lot about that. And I really go back to what you're saying. It's the individual that has the power. And we're just too silly to know it. We look at these 300 million people that are in this country and think, what can I do? I can't vote. I can't. My voice doesn't do much. But what you can do is you can set the example. You can do what Gandhi said. Be that change you want to see. And if you just influence one or two other people, that's fine. It's a start. And if you educate that way and you inspire people so that they see, I want to be like that. That makes sense. I would rather give than take. I don't need to have a narcissistic life because, quite frankly, America is depressed. And that's why we're taking all these silly pills that we're taking that we think somehow are going to fix things. And, of course, they never fix the underlying problem. We need to do the work. So, bottom line here, it's a movement that we can orchestrate by ourselves, by setting example. We can inspire people to want to do it. It's unstoppable. It's the only thing that's unstoppable, and it's the thing that looks the least potential to solve the problem. And that's the sad part about it. And yet at the same time, I get angry too. I'm outraged too. But the difference between me and you fellas, and I'm including you in my group, between us and the rest of what we're seeing in America is that people are outraged. They're doing as much as they can to argue about things and to make their position clear. And what we need to do is change the way we think. We need to evolve to a higher level of consciousness. You know, it was Einstein who says, you can't solve a problem at the same level at which it was created. This problem was created by narcissistic people who don't care about anybody else, who want to have all the money that they can. And even if they have most of it, it's not enough.
Okay, but Lynn, we only have a few minutes left. Just a thought on what you just said.
Yep.
And an earlier thought, when you said that we have to hold to a higher standard.
Yes.
Was it not Albert Camus who said we rarely confide in those who are better than we are? And was it not George Bernard Shaw who said the worst sin towards our fellow creatures is not to hate them, but to be indifferent to them? That's the essence of inhumanity. So when you look at narcissism, look at many of those 99%ers out there, because they are as selfish and as narcissistic, and they are not going at this in such a way that will cause reasonable and positive change. If they wanted to stop all this violence towards them and towards society and the violence against those who are poor and the violence against those around the world who are under the heel of our mercenary and imperialistic design, then they would stop eating McDonald's, stop drinking Coca-Cola, stop paying their interest and boycott their colleges. You want to stop the police and pepper spraying at the University of California, Davis, then
right.
have every single student in solidarity say, no more classes, we're closing down
That's
this university.
Right.
Then
right.
watch what the authority and the chancellor does.
That's right.
Until you have the courage to do that, then you're just another narcissistic person out there saying, well, I want what I want, and it's about how I feel.
Yes,
well, friend,
indeed.
I don't really give a about how you feel.
Right.
I care about what comes from what we have to feel. We have
That's
to feel
exactly
compassion.
Right.
You don't. Where were you your entire life
That's
until
right.
this moment?
That's right.
And then what are you going to do when you get tired and cold and decide that you've had your day and go on?
Yeah,
no
well,
movement,
right.
not the civil rights movement, not the human rights movement, not the feminist movement, ever succeeded because a bunch of dilettantes took to the streets.
You
we had
it.
Leaders. We had platforms. We had single-mindedness. We were not afraid to direct it. We had boycotts, and we
yep.
were willing to suffer in that cause, and look what good came from that. Until
right.
you have that determination, then do not throw laurels at those at their feet because they have taken a stance without looking at the sustainability of it. I believe that we can change everything if we start by living a more idealistic life, and as Shaw said, don't condemn those people. And as Camus said, go out and find someone like a Rabbi Abraham, Michael Lerner, or Laszlo,
right.
people who are living at a higher ideal, and
right.
emulate them.
Right.
Emulate the person that's gotten off the grid. Emulate the person that rides a bike. Emulate the person
that's
who's drinking from a tap with filtered water instead of using plastic.
Right.
Emulate the person that buys only American-made and crafts and living wage of clothes. Emulate the person that will not allow the corruption at the head of their union, even though they respect and honor the principles of unionism. But almost all unions today have become a part of the cancer of corruption because they give the power of their membership over to those who are willing to bid the highest for their entitlement re-slotting.
Right.
Emulate the person that's willing to be the activist who makes a difference. When you are willing to do that on an individual level, you will have change, and it will be nonviolent, but it is powerful because you take the money out of their pockets, you take the money out of their banks, you take your eyes off their television and ears off their radio. You don't read their stupid mags.
That's
you
right.
don't go to their conferences. You don't vote for their politicians. Suddenly, you give the power back to where it belongs.
Right.
Your final thoughts on this, Lynn, and then your final thoughts, Daryl.
I just love what you said, Gary. I'm all for it. I think one of the biggest issues is the post-traumatic stress that most of our families are going through. All our country is going through. It's a depressed country. So they're in a tough position. We've got to educate them by example. I totally agree with you. Well said, Gary.
Thank you. Daryl, your final thoughts, please.
We have three fantastic tools at our disposal. We have social networks that we can communicate with in ways that a generation ago would be inconceivable. Use those networks to inform them of your own personal choices. Vote with your dollar. I think that is one of the most important ways we can take action immediately. Say no to the industrial food complex. It is so easy to take an important stand so quickly. And also continue to be politically vigilant. We need to protect the freedoms that we do have and continue to strive for more.
Daryl, I would add something onto what you said. I do not believe in being politically vigilant. I believe in being spiritually vigilant.
Amen.
Because from a spiritual perspective, it always dwarfs the political, which can be easily manipulated. And I trust no politician.
Indeed.
Because they have all made such compromises against all that is truth just to maintain their power, that they are not worthy of our trust or respect. If they're at 9%, that's 9% more than what they deserve. And let us send over all the articles you have, Daryl, and I will see that the Progressive Radio Network, which, by the way, just for your information, if you Google liberal radio, we're number one at about 59 million. If you Google conservative radio, it's about 40 million. Google what we started 7 years ago. I started 7 years and 4 months ago, Progressive Radio, this morning, you can go right there now, 255 million hits today. You heard me right, 255 million hits on Progressive Radio today.
Well, God bless you, Gary.
Huh?
God bless you. You're doing such good work. You're one of my heroes.
Well, we're doing it without a single article, a single piece of publicity under the radar. So the real revolution in America is coming on a spiritual energy level that is non-perceptible to the coarse and crude and the insensitive commercial media and the already dank, dark, and completely perverse left and right in our society. I thank you both very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Gary. What an honor to be on your show.
Thank you, Gary.
All the best, Daryl. And Daryl, give us your website, please.
It's the Alliance for Natural Health. It's anh-usa.org.
Send us your material so we can get it up. And alternativemedicine.com.
No, actually, it's not, Gary. It's drsaputo.com.
Oh, Dr. Saputo, S-A-P-U-T-O.
Yes.
And Dr. Saputo can be heard on Progressive Radio Network each week here. So go to our listings, and you'll see his program, and you can download any of his previous archive show. I'm Gary Nall. Have a nice day, everyone.
The Progressive Commentary Hour with Gary Nall, Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network.